Okay, we began last week the describing the conquest campaign of Shevet Yehuda. And in the middle of the list of their campaigns, it interrupts with an incident. We're going to start again from the beginning of this incident of Shevet Yehuda. So we're going to begin with Perek Aleph, in case anybody's following along inside. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph. So they have already smote many cities. And then Pasuk Yud Aleph says, Vayelech Mishan al Yoshevei Devir. They went from there to the inhabitants of Devir. V'shem Devir lefanim Kiryat Sefer. Shem Devir had previously been called Kiryat Sefer. We began this last week on it. Pick it up again from here. Vayemekolit. Now, they had a hard time conquering this Devir, this Kiryat Sefer. Vayemekolit. Asher yake es Kiryat Sefer ulechodo. Whoever manages to smite Kiryat Sefer and capture it, v'nasati lo es achsa biti li'isha. I will give him my daughter Achsa as a wife. Meaning, there was really a personal campaign. Where does Kalev come in here? This is Kalev ben Yefune. We remember him back from Parsha Shlach. He had been promised Hebron, the area of Hebron, where he had started his spying campaign back in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So this was kind of a personal campaign of his. He was meant to personally conquer these areas for himself and keep them. And one of the areas he was meant to conquer was this Kiryat Sefer, and they had a hard time conquering it. Now, as we mentioned last week, we're not going to spend too much time on this now. Chazal tell us that what was going on here on the deeper level was they were having a hard time conquering the city because there was a Torah deficiency at the time. 3,000 halachas had been forgotten, whatever that means exactly, after Moshe Rabbeinu's passing. This point, we were at a point in history where there was no longer such a thing as going and asking Hashem, what's the halacha? From this point on, there's no such thing. And therefore, now they had to regain these halachas, relearn these halachas through their own study. And as we described last week, the Sfarim say that what was the connection between this and this place, Kiryat Sefer, which was actually a physical city, it wasn't just about that they didn't have these halachas, that Torah, as we know, is the blueprint of the world, and there are different areas of Torah that are represented in different parts of the world. And this part of the world was represented by that part of Torah, which really means that that area of Torah was the spiritual life of this world. It was the battery of that area, Kiryat Sefer. And therefore, as long as they didn't have a hold on that part of Torah, they could not gain a hold on that city, Kiryat Sefer. So therefore, Kalev made this offer. Whoever can capture Kiryat Sefer, which means whoever can come along and resolve these 3,000 difficulties, I'll give him my daughter Achsa as a wife. Again, we discussed this last week. I'll mention again that this whole sugya actually appears in Sefer Yeshua. We discussed it at great length there. Anybody who's interested can tell me, and I'll send you the recordings of Tushiurim on this. But now we're going to move through it in a more basic way. Vayilkidah Osniel ben Kenaz Achi Kalev Hakotay Mimeno. So now Kalev had a younger brother called Osniel ben Kenaz. How can Osniel ben Kenaz be the brother of Kalev ben Yefune? This one's father's name is Kenaz, the other one's father's name is Yefune. Rashi says they were maternal brothers. Okay, so whatever it is, half brother, he captured it. Vayiten lo es achsa bita liyisha. So he granted him Achsa as a wife. Meaning, again, as Chazal say, Osniel was actually one of the greatest Torah sages of that generation, as we're going to see later. And he sat down and made a study of these, this whole area of Torah that was ambiguous, and he captured it. He resolved all of the difficulty through his pupil. And yes, he was granted Achsa. He won the prize as a wife.
The literal literal sense is to be immortal.
No. Both were operating at the same time. There was a city, physical city, that could not be captured because they did not have control of that area of Torah. And in order to capture that city, they had to capture this area of Torah, and Othniel ben Knaz actually did both. He did both. He resolved all these halakhic problems, and then he went ahead, and the city fell like nothing.
Were the cities were linked accordingly, that before there was any battle won, they had a conquest inside of Torah?
Well, here they lost that Torah, that was the problem. But as we've already seen in Sefer Yeshua, military success depended on intense involvement in Torah study. And therefore they were blamed for having slackened in Torah study on the night before they went to war against Yericho. So yes, the battery of the whole military campaign was their Torah study. Like we mentioned last week, this was obvious to Jews in earlier times and is unfortunately missed by Jews today. Okay, now Vayehi Bivaya. Now, Mamish throws in what seems like a very peripheral detail. So, he married Achsa, very nice. But Achsa had a problem. As she came to be married to him, Vatisiteu, so Kalev also, he gave them land, that was part of the dowry. So, Vatisiteu Lishol Me Esavia. She pushed her husband, Othniel, her new husband, to let her make a request of her father. She wanted to request the field of her father. What was the problem? We'll see in a moment. She came to her father, she wanted to push him to grant her a field. So she did this very dramatically. She came riding on a donkey to her father, and as she approached her father, she threw herself off the donkey. A very dramatic display here. So Kalev sees that she's got this desperate problem. She throws herself off the donkey. He tells her, what's the problem? And she answered, Havali bracha, give me blessing, meaning give me a good area. Ki eretz hanegev nisatani. You've given me arid land. You've given me arid land. Dry land. It's dry. It's not moist. It's not watered. So give me springs, give me water sources, so that I'll be able to water the land. So he gave her higher and lower watered areas. Okay, what? And then what happened? Did they have a problem setting up their apartments? Like, why doesn't the Navi tell us how they spend the first month of their marriage? What's so significant here that not only is this specific incident inserted into the whole story of Yehuda's conquest, but also this detail that she wasn't quite happy, she had a problem with the apartment and they had to move somewhere else where there was better plumbing? Did the phone line work out quick right away? So the Mepharshim say here also there was something going on here that's being stressed. So again, all this was literal. They had gotten dry land. The Malbim says, by the way, that's why, as we saw, this parsha is basically repeated from Sefer Yeshua. So the Malbim said the reason it's repeated twice is because in one time it's telling the spiritual story, and in one place it's telling the physical story. Both happened. So, what happened here was as follows. Sorry? I don't know. It was the same story, you could say, with the same words, on two levels. Okay. So it's going almost like this. She had just married the Gadol Hador. Marrying the Gadol Hador does not necessarily make for comfortable material life. The Gadol Hador has his head in Torah. He's busy with Torah all the time. He's not all that interested in material pursuits. And therefore, Parnassah by him is neglected to an extent. Could be to differing extents. And therefore she said, you've given me a lot of spirituality, but materially, I have nothing. I'm going to be a poor woman. I need you to give me more just material. Set us up materially, otherwise I'm not going to be able to manage. So Chazal take note of this, and it seems strange. We can imagine that if Lamaisa, Kolev was offering her as a prize for the scholar who had managed to do this, right? And Asniel ben Kenaz considered her a prize, right? She wasn't a simple woman, right? She was the daughter of Kolev, and she was worthy of being the wife of Asniel ben Kenaz, who was the Gadol HaDor. Not only was she worthy of it, but he had to prove himself worthy. Okay? So we're talking about a very special woman. So that's her complaint. What's going to be with Parnassa? So Chazal say that she kind of indicated the answer to this by throwing herself off a donkey. Why'd she throw herself off a donkey? Right? All the different details in the pasuk have a lot of significance. What if she was driving a Chevrolet? The story would have played out differently. So Chazal say that yes, she threw herself off a donkey. A donkey denotes materialism. Chomer, chomrius. And it says that when there's no chamor, oh, that's right. By the way, why isn't a donkey in Hebrew, a female donkey, called chamora? Almost all animals, the female of the man is whatever. Why isn't the donkey chamora? It's a different word for a female donkey. The male is the chamor, the female is the osoy. Why? And the answer is actually kind of lying in what's coming. The donkey represents material. The woman in the relationship represents the material aspect of the relationship. Now, as we'll see soon, that's not a put down. That's actually a very great shvach. We'll see that very soon. But therefore, when you're talking about the donkey, who already is the epitome of materialism, you can't make a chamoira out of a chamor. Chamor is already as material as it gets. So you can't take that and say, now that the material aspect of that is a chamoira. You have to have a different word for it. Okay, that's in parentheses, just for the fun of it. But, what's that? I heard that from my Rebbe. Okay, but back to the subject. So she threw herself off to the chamor, and the chazal say also, a donkey doesn't know chachmas. If there's food, he's happy. There isn't food, he starts praying. He starts kvetching. So she was coming and saying as follows. Yes, she was a very great woman. And she wasn't embarrassed to say, she said, listen, there, women have a nature. Woman's nature is that she has to see her house set up material. Just like a donkey, when there's no food in the trough, it begins kvetching immediately, starts braying. When a woman doesn't see food in the pantry, she starts complaining. Now, we have this great woman is coming and saying this, which shows us that this is not a put-down for the woman, right? Many times the person feels like, you know, women get petty, I'm involved with such great things, and she's kvetching about something about the house, right? We know, right? By the woman, you know, the house has to be clean. That's number one, right? Maybe it's more worthwhile for me to sit down and learn for an hour on Erev Shabbos instead of being busy, especially since my wife and I were just learning Musa last night, and we talked about the greatness of learning Torah, and she was all inspired, and she was telling me not to be mevatel, right? But before Shabbos, when the house is messy, that comes first. So we write some, you know, we make women jokes. We make women jokes. But actually, we're being told by Chazal that this is the nature of a woman, that Achsa actually raised the banner of it, and she came and said, I'm not ashamed to say this. I'm coming and demanding. I want you to set me up according to a woman's needs. Why? And this is a profound point, which will, I hope, give us better appreciation of our wives. Man is meant, just like we said before, the man is the spirit, more spiritual element of the relationship. The woman is the more material element of the relationship. Man is meant to be involved in spirituality. He's meant to soar. He's meant to fly high. But the problem is that we live in this world, and you have to be anchored. It has to be able to work. The woman is the one who makes it work. Right? If a man, we're here to achieve a lot in this world. But if we just be flying with our spiritual agendas, the family wouldn't run, there would be no continuity, and therefore we're given a wife with a very material nature, and she can be a great woman. But the greatness of a woman is in the fact, I have to realize this, the greatness of a woman is in the fact that she wants to see her home running right. And therefore, yes, Hafsa was able to come and say without being ashamed, yes, I'm marrying the Gadol HaDor, but I got to make sure that my home is going to be running right. Okay. We'll move on. The next pasuk says, but B'nai Kaini, now again, a certain insertion here. Really, let's remember what our context is. We're describing Yehuda's whole conquest campaign. But here another insertion. U'b'nei Kaini Choysein Moshe, the children of Kaini, the father-in-law of Moshe, these were the children of Yisrael. Remember, Moshe had promised Yisrael. Yisrael was not really a part of the Jewish people, and therefore, him and his family were not entitled to a share in Eretz Yisrael. But Moshe told them, we'll set you up. We'll set you up okay. So yeah, Yisrael's family moved to Eretz Yisrael with the Jewish people, and they were granted the suburbs of Yericho. Yericho had been destroyed. It was not supposed to be rebuilt. But the suburbs around Yericho were very fertile, very quality land. And they were granted this area. It was called Ir HaTmarim, the city of dates. So Alume Ir HaTmarim, the children of Kaini, the descendants of Yericho, ascended from the city of Tmarim, it's Bnei Yehuda, Midbar Yehuda. And they went with the children of Yehuda to Midbar Yehuda, to the desert of Yehuda. They left a very fertile, good area, moved out to a desert, Asher Benegev Arod, that was south of Arod, Vayelech Vayeshev Etzaam. And they went, and they settled among the people there, they settled with the Bnei Yehuda there in the desert near Arod. And now we're about to continue the conquest campaign. But why is this inserted here? What happened? Again, someone moved. That has to be mentioned. It's very important to mention that in the middle of the psukim here. So technically, what this is saying is, this was always a phenomenon all throughout the days of Sifrei HaKodesh, that the Bnei Kaini, the children of Kaini, the children of Yisrael, they were not mamish mingled with the Jewish people in general. They kind of lived on their own, sometimes in proximity to the other nations. And when there would be wars, when there would be fights, when the area would get heated, the Jewish people always made a point of sending a warning to them, right? They kept their loyalty to them. They always made a point of sending a warning to them, clear out, evacuate, because this place is coming under fire. We remember that Shaul did that, right? Before Shaul attacked the Amaleki, he sent a message to a group of the Kaini who were living there, and he told them clear out because it was going to turn into a war zone. So, simply understood, that's what this pasuk is saying. Yehuda was about to attack the area, and therefore they told the family of Kaini, we want to resettle you. We want to move you to a different area until the war is finished. But Chazal said that there was more going on here. Othniel ben Knaz, again, Abshevet Yehuda, right, like we just saw, Abshevet Yehuda, was, as we saw, a very great Torah teacher. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. That was his profession. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. And very little about him is described here. It's interesting how often in Tanakh, you can have people who are actually towering personalities, and you get very, very sparse information about them. There's a little bit about him in Sefer Shoftim. In Divrei Hayomim, there's another pasuk or two about him. In Divrei Hayomim, it just tells us that he was a very chashuv of a person. That's what it says in Divrei Hayomim. And it tells us of one tefillah that he made, which was what? So he said, and if the Navi is presenting this when it's describing who he was, apparently this tefillah represented his essence. He said, basically, his tefillah was, I can only live happily if you grant me the peace of mind to learn properly and many good talmidim. He said, if you grant me this, then you will relieve me of my distress, meaning otherwise my life is just sadness, okay? And I'll just die in depression. That's basically, I don't remember the exact lashon, but that is the effect. If you will, Yosnia, to Hashem, This was his tefillah to Hashem. His tefillah to Hashem was, and again, this is represented as, this is presented in the Rambam as describing the man. This tefillah was his essence. He tells Hashem, if you want to give me peace of mind, I mean, as long as he didn't have a good thriving yeshiva with good talmidim, he was an unhappy man. If you want to give me peace of mind, give me a lot of good talmidim, then you relieve me of my suffering, he tells Hashem, and I won't die of depression. That's how it's worded, basically. Okay? So, Hashem granted his tefillah. He granted him star talmidim. Who were they? The Bnei Cain, the children of Cain. Children of Cain, he had a tradition from their father Yisrael. You can be living comfortably, you can have a good setup at home, but if there's truth to be gotten, pick up and leave. Move out to a desert, right? That was mamish, the legacy of their father Yisrael. And this is what happened here. Midbar Yehuda, the desert of Yehuda, the area around Arad, was where Asniel ben Kenaz set up his yeshiva. And it's a good idea for a yeshiva to be out in the desert. No distractions around. And they picked up, this is what the Pasuk is saying, they picked up and moved out of Yerat Marim. They moved out of Yericho in order to join Asniel ben Kenaz's yeshiva. Following the Fuksa, this was the approach of the family. That was what the family was all about. That's what Yisrael did. And this was the fulfillment of Asniel ben Kenaz's tefillah. He had davened for a good talmid, a good body of talmidim. Hashem's response was, here, take the children of Yisrael. They'll be your yeshiva. Now Chazal had a very chashuv, a point of significance, which is something we can go home with and apply it all over the place. Let's remember Yisrael's background. Yisrael had a prestigious position back in the olden days. He fell into disfavor, but what was he? He was one of the chief advisors of Paro. Chief advisors of Paro means he was basically one of the closest confidants of the greatest king in the world. Okay? He lost that position. Why? Because Paro was, so to speak, consulting with them as to how to deal with the Jewish people. He made it very clear what he wanted to hear. Right? And the advisors were supposed to respond. What does the king need advisors for? Oh king, if that's what you want to do, it's a great idea. Right? That's what advisors are for. And Bilam knew the job. He was a star advisor. Yisrael had a conscience. And this was before he really knew of the Jewish people. But I shouldn't say that.
And he married his daughter off.
That was later.
Oh yeah.
That was later. Yisrael had a conscience. And he said, he spoke up against it. This was a very dangerous thing to do and a scary thing to do. And he had to flee, he had to run for his life because he gave Pari the answer Pari didn't want. So he had to run for his life. But Chazal notes that it's not just an issue that he risked his life. Risking life is one thing, but the fact that he had one of the most prestigious positions in the world. Right? He basically reached the highest position of power anyone at the time could reach, because Paro was the most powerful man in the world. It's probably a better position to be Paro's closest advisor than to be king somewhere else. And he gave up all that. Why? Because of the truth. Because of the emes. A big sacrifice. And for a long time he suffered because of that. Right? He also, he kept doing this. He didn't learn his lesson. Right? He got another position. He became the high priest of Midian. Right? But then, when he started figuring out that that's not quite right either, okay, fine, so play the game. No, he couldn't do that. It's not true. So again, he found himself in the dumps. Right? Being ridiculed, bad-mouthed. The Jerusalem Post was writing against him, undoubtedly. And this was what Yisrael was all about. A lot of sacrifice. And now, apparently that didn't change much in his lifetime. He moved out to the desert where, okay, yeah, he was greeted and he was celebrated. But Chazal are telling us, Chazal say, he gave up the position of being advisor to Paro, which at the time basically meant sacrificing everything he was all about. All of his ambition. There's no question that reaching that position didn't happen overnight. It was after years of ambition and climbing higher on the ladder until he reached there. Right? He gave that up because of the MS, and therefore It was given back to him. His children became advisors. Advisors of who? Advisors of the Jewish people. The children of Keni. We see that they were the star Talmidim of the Yeshiva of Othniel ben Knaz. Ultimately, they ended up constituting a big part of the body of the Sanhedrin, in the Lishkas HaGozis. They became the advisors of the Jewish people. So you see how Yisrael was rewarded. So this is just an example of what Chazal tell us. Have a mechashiv schar mitzvah keneged hefseid. When, in order to do the right thing, you're going to suffer a great loss. Chazal say, believe me, whatever, all the great things that you're going to lose, what you're going to get afterwards is going to outweigh them so much more. You know what it means now? When Yisrael was already in the Olam HaEmes, and his children are rendering the decisions, not that Paro is going to follow, his children are rendering the decisions that is going to dictate for the Jewish people what Torah is. You know what that means to be the father of that in the Olam HaEmes? I don't. So, you're going to give up something really big? Something that you're thrilled with? Realize that what you're going to get in return is going to knock it out of the ballpark. So yes, there's a lot of significance in this little story about the children of Keni resettling, moving out of the Eretz Marim, moving out of that fertile, pleasant city of Yericho, and moving out to the desert to join the yeshiva of Othniel ben Knaz. Okay, we move on. Now, back to Yehuda. Right? Everything we've seen this week has been a break. Last week we were seeing they conquered this city, they conquered this city, they conquered this city. Now we're getting back to it. And I want to stress again, we're going through this, it starts looking boring, right? Starts, you know, they conquered and they conquered and they conquered. So we're not appreciating what this looks like because we haven't seen the next psukim yet. So we're going to see that none of the other Shvatim did it the way they did. And that's why later, after we've seen the other shot, we're going to come back and contrast it. But now let's see. Vayenach Yehuda es Shimon Nochi. Then Yehuda went along with his brother Shimon, right, as we saw. They formed an alliance, the tribes of Yehuda and Shimon. Vayaku es HaKnani Yoshev Tzfas. They smote the Knani living in Tzfat. Vayachrimu Oysa. And they destroyed the city. Again, we have to note the energy and the alacrity here, because this is what we're going to be contrasting them with, the rest of the tribes. They not only conquered the city, but destroyed it. Vayikra es Shema Yir Charma. And they named the city Destruction. Next, Vayilkoi Yehuda es Azov es Gvula. Yehuda then captured Aza and its territories. Ves Ashkelon ves Gvula, ves Ekron ves Gvula. Then they conquered Ashkelon, Ekron, and their territories. Vayihi Hashem es Yehuda. And now, there's a little bit of a hitch in the road. Hashem was with Yehuda, and among these campaigns, he had two battles to fight. One, to conquer a mountaintop, and then to go from there and conquer the valley. So, Hashem was with Yehuda, Vayirish Esahar, and they conquered the mountaintop. But, Kiloyla Oirishis Yeshvei Emek, but then they could not conquer the valley. Why couldn't they conquer the valley? Listen why. Because they had iron chariots. Does that make sense? We're talking about people on a divine campaign. This is basically the promise that Hashem made to Moshe, that they're going to move ahead unhindered. And that worked fine until they came with the plate to a place with iron chariots. Yes. Splitting of the sea, 10 Makkas, Mitzrayim can be destroyed. Iron chariots, we're stuck. So the Mepharshim say that that's an obvious question, but the Mepharshim say that it's even more than that. The whole thing doesn't make sense. Iron chariots are a technicality, but conquering a mountaintop is obviously more difficult than fighting a valley, especially in earlier times. It was always considered a very challenging battle. Uphill battle, right? We use the expression today too, the uphill battle. Uphill battle is infinitely more difficult than a downhill battle. And therefore, the Mepharshim say that naturally the whole thing didn't make sense. If they were able to conquer the mountaintop, that was much harder than conquering the valley with the iron chariots. Technically. Naturally. they're able to conquer the mountaintop, the valley with the iron chariots should have been nothing. So what was going on here? So what comes out from the Mepharshim is, each one expresses it in a different way, we'll see momentarily, what comes out from the Mepharshim is that, yes, Hashem granted them one unnatural victory after the other, and then suddenly an unnatural loss. Right? Suddenly an unnatural loss. Why? Why did this happen? This is kind of similar to what happened with Yeshua at Ai. Right? It just didn't make any sense. So, different Mepharshim say different things. Targum Yonason says that that's sinned in some way. Which might mean, as we saw earlier, maybe somebody didn't have Kavanah in Shemana Esrei, or something like that. Something wrong happened. It wasn't even enough to warrant explicit mention in the Navi. So it wasn't who knows what. The Navi wasn't shy about highlighting sins. But others say that no, it wasn't because of that. There was no sin, just Hashem wanted certain game to remain in place to use as tests in the future. But the Metzuda says, well, this is really what comes out from all of them, is that the point being made here is as follows. The tribe of Yehuda, as they're going from one successful campaign to the other, are being told a very important lesson. You must remember that victory is not you, it's Hashem. Now, that seems like such an obvious point, but yet it's so difficult. It's so difficult on the practical level. For people to be involved in physical activity, but yet to remain attuned to what's really going on in the spiritual level. This is actually a directive for the Jewish people. I mean, this was a lesson that Hashem is showing them. He tripped them up a little bit because he wanted them to remember, to retain the perspective that as you're succeeding, with all the military campaigns, you have to always remember that it's not your might. It's not your might. Like Hashem warned in the Torah, "Pentoimar bilvavcha." This is great. I heard Yitzchak Rabin. I once had the privilege of hearing a recording of a drasha of Yitzchak Rabin. What's that? A drasha given by Yitzchak Rabin. Okay. Now, it was. Let's see. And he said, I think it was the Yom HaAtzma'ut drasha. And he was describing the achievements. Look where we got by today. And he said, in earlier times they still used biblical, not earlier times, I mean the old timers. The old timers still used biblical expressions. You wouldn't hear any of the current. So he said, "Bekocheinu ubeotzem yadeinu asinu lanu et achayel hazeh." He said, with our strength and with the might of our hands, we have achieved all of this valor. We have to see today. Yeah. But what's so ironic about it? He knew approximately a pasuk. What's the full pasuk? Pen toimar bilvavcha. Be careful lest you say v'koichi v'itzam yodi asisi esachayil hazeh. Through my might and through the strength of my hands, I achieved all of this. So Yitzchak Rabin came and did exactly that. He used exactly the words that Hashem. Not only did he say the idea that we're so strong, you know, he didn't just come and say we're a really great bunch. He used those words, right? Before what? Yeah. It was in my day. It was something that I had. I was in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Yeah. No. This was in the early 90s. I was here in Eretz Yisrael at the time. And I remember thinking, that hits it on the head. This is the point that's being made here. You have to always keep attuned to the facts. And this is something that we see also today. We have to note that. Like you just mentioned before, what happened after the Six-Day War? There were two approaches. Miracles, and then there was IDF is a mini superpower. That was the expression. A mini superpower. Now, this same Yitzchak Rabin, I'm using him, I apologize to him, but I'm using him because this exactly brings out the point. It's Lishitasa. It's not just that he said that then. It's Lishitasa here. They interviewed him. They interviewed him at the time. Now, the Egyptians said, not so, right? Natzer was a man of known for his tact and wisdom. And he said as follows. He said when they lost the war, it didn't make sense. Egypt couldn't lose the war. Egypt was invincible. So he said, it came out different pshatim of why Israel won in such a major way. So he said that the English and the Americans were fighting along with the Israelis. That's what he said.
And the French.
Oh, the French also, right. Now that was quickly debunked. But then another theory arose, that Israel had developed some sort of secret weapon. So they were interviewing Yitzhak Rabin. And they asked him, they said, people are saying that the success was because there was some secret weapon was used. Yitzhak Rabin was offended. He was offended. He was being interviewed by some foreign correspondent. He was offended and he said, it's clear as could be that it's due to the skill of the war of the fighters. Right? So we understand that that's why he said that. This is exactly the point that Hashem is making. And therefore, yes, we saw the IDF have glorious successes and then embarrassing failures. This is exactly what happened here. To the point of what? To the point of keeping the perspective that it's all of these military campaigns are Hashem's tools, Hashem's orchestration. Remember that. So here, you saw, you had a smashing uphill victory, and then technicalities messed up your downhill campaign. Again, like we said, the Rechev Basel, the iron chariots, were not more difficult to overcome than the uphill. Technicalities messed up what should have been an easy battle. So this is the point, the perspective that's being stressed here. So yes, Yehuda had a great campaign. Yehuda had a great campaign with that one hitch. But now we continue in Yehuda's glorious campaign. So, Pasuk Chav. Vayitnu likalev es chevroi asher diber Moshe. Kasher diber Moshe. They granted Kalev the city of Chevron, like Moshe had spoken. Right, remember that? I'm sorry? No. Yeah, but they had just won an uphill battle. To win and mount a battle uphill would be more difficult, the Mepharshim say, than overcoming those iron chariots. Now, Vayitnu leKalev es Chevron, okay, that they granted Kalev the city of Chevron, Kasher diber Moshe, right? We remember that he was promised that back in Parshas Shlach, when he hadn't cooperated with the Meraglim, he was promised the city of Hebron. And he drove out from there the three giants. We mentioned them earlier. If you want their names, Achiman, Sheshai, and Talmud. Okay. Now, we're finished with Yehuda. That's the end of Yehuda's campaign. And as we've been seeing, it was one battle after the other, tak, 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 not stopping. And now all of a sudden, now we're going to move on to the other Shvatim, and the whole tone is going to very much change. So now Shevet Binyamin. The Yevusi Yoshev Yerushalayim Lo Harishu B'nei Binyamin. The Yevusi, who were settled in Yerushalayim, the children of Binyamin, did not drive out. Vayeshev Ayevusi as B'nei Binyamin B'Yerushalayim Ad Ayoyim Azeh. And the Yevusi dwelt with or among the children of Binyamin in Yerushalayim until this day. So okay, the truth is that this might yet not be a failure, because Rashi says that there was a reason that they didn't drive out the Yevusi. Who are the Yevusi? The Yevusi were Plishtim. They were the descendants of Avimelech. Avraham Avinu had sworn to Avimelech that until a certain point they had a pact that there wouldn't be any aggression. So Rashi says that the reason they didn't drive the Yevusi out of Yerushalayim was because at this point in history the pact was still in place. Okay, so yes, they lived with B'nai B'Namin in Yerushalayim. As we saw earlier, Yehuda had also conquered Yerushalayim. There were two parts of Yerushalayim. Part of Yerushalayim belonged to Yehuda, part belonged to Binyamin. Yehuda cleared out their area of Yerushalayim, but Binyamin's territory still had those Yevusi among them. Ad Ayem Azeh, until this day, means until Sefer Shoftim was written. Shmuel Anavi wrote Sefer Shoftim. After, they actually did clear them out of Yerushalayim. Okay, now we move on to the other Shvatim in earnest. Vayalu Beis Yosef Gamhein Beis El. Now, the children of Yosef ascended on Beis El. Vashem Imam. And Hashem was with them. Meaning, we're stressing here. Hashem was with them. To show what? That the Bnei Yosef were going to be shown the same divine success that the Bnei Yehuda were shown, as we'll see momentarily. Their first campaign was a completely miraculous victory. But yet, we're going to see that they did not follow the example of the children of Yehuda, and they were a bit more lax. So therefore, Malbim says, we're stressing from the onset, they were shown very great divine assistance. And that, therefore, is held against them when they fail to follow through. So let's see. How did their campaign start? Again, right, we remember how it's working. Each tribe has to conquer their respective territory. It's each tribe for himself. So, they start with Beis El. By Assyria, Beis Yosef, the Beis El, Beis Yosef sent scouts to Beis El just to check out the area. The Shema Ilifanim Luz. And the area had been called Luz previously. Now, there was a problem with approaching the city. What was the problem? The borders of the city were very well camouflaged. And you had to know how to get in. Meaning there was this whole city that was simply inaccessible unless you knew the secret. Now, it's kind of hinted to in the name of the city, Luz. Luz is a hazelnut tree. So that was actually the secret. There was one. You talk about a whole border of the city. There was one hazelnut tree on the border that was hollow. You went inside into a tunnel, and that was how you accessed the city. It was invisible from the outside. It was camouflaged, and therefore they did not know how to access the city. So what did they do? The scouts, they had to come back and report. So they staked out the city. Again, this is not the whole army. The army is waiting back at home. They're waiting for the scouts to come and report. So, Vayira Shemrim Ish Yotze Min Ha'ir. And then suddenly they saw somebody materialize. Somebody had left the city. They didn't see where he had gone out from. But they suddenly saw somebody walking. They understood that he had just left the city. Vayomru Lo. So they told him, Ha'einu Na Es Mevo'i Ha'ir. Please show us the entrance of the city. And we'll deal kindly with you. Okay. So he showed them the entrance to the city. Now they were able to get in. And they smote the city by sword. Who smote the city by sword? What? Who are we discussing up till now? More specifically, what? The scouts. They sent a few scouts ahead. The scouts discovered the access to the city. They went in by themselves. I don't know how many of them there were. How much of a team of scouts would be sent out? 2? 10? I don't know. Not 100, right?
Enough to do the job.
Enough to do the job. In this case, right? Enough to do the job. So they went in, and the scouts, on their own, smote the city.
Special forces.
Special forces. That's it. So now, that's a ish, that's called mishpachto shilech, and they spared this man and his family. Okay, vayelecha ish eretz achidim. So this man, so here we're just noting. We said that Hashem showed them special divine favor. This is how it manifested. The scouts were just shown the access to the city. They came in and conquered the whole thing. So again, we're seeing that they were shown miraculous assistance. Now, what's with this fellow? This fellow went to the land of Chittim. This place wasn't a friendly place anymore, right? He moved out with his family. And he built a city. And he called the name of the city Luz. He named it after his original hometown. And that's the city that's known as Luz until today. I don't know where that is. I know of a street called Luz, but I don't think that's being referred to here. Okay. Now Chazal say that there's a lot of significance to this last little pasuk. This man, Chazal say, was a Baal Chesed, which also has to be understood. He did Chesed with the Jewish people. He showed them the way in. And therefore, he was rewarded the schar coming to a Baal Chesed. Now, this itself has to be understood. We are Jews. And therefore, we go for the Jews, right? But would we say that a person who goes and turns his own hometown over to the enemy should be recognized as a virtuous person? Meaning, I would say, like we said before about Rachel, even the Jewish people should say, we gotta keep far from this guy. He helped us in this case. But this is a treacherous guy, right? Why is he accredited with virtue? So the answer is, this is what we said last week, but this is again, this is a very important point to be understood. That when the Jews came, they were not just coming as a conquering army. They were coming implementing the values of Hashem, meaning they carried the banner of Hashem's values. The people of Canaan were made to understand that they were not just coming to clear the land out so they can settle, but they were clearing the land out because the behavior of the people was wicked. And they were bringing Hashem's justice upon these people. Meaning, they represented a different value system. They represented Torah, right? So it wasn't just an issue of these against those. If that would be the case, even us as Jews would have to relate to this guy as a villain. But that's not what it was. It was that they were coming with a value system. Now the reason this person did what he did was because he recognized the truth of what the Jewish people stood for. He appreciated the truth of what they stood for. And therefore he said, yes, that outweighs my personal loyalties. Just like Yisrael said, and just like Rachab said. And therefore, Chazal deem him a Baal Chesed, who was rewarded in a very big way. So how was he rewarded? I want to quickly get through this, but this is very profound. How was he rewarded? Okay, he ended up getting this city called Luz. Now Luz was not... Chazal tell us very extraordinary things about the city Luz. First of all, this city Luz is a source for Tcheles, which already was considered something very chashuv. But even more, I don't know which is more, but whatever it is, Luz basically remained unharmed straight through the periods of Sanherib, who basically messed up all these areas. Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the whole land, Luz remained standing. He destroyed Yerushalayim. Luz remained standing. More than that, because I'll say an astounding thing, people didn't die. In Luz, people didn't die. When a person decided he had enough, didn't help to take a suicide pill. It didn't work. What did they do? It says, when the elderly had enough, they left the city. They left the city and they died. Okay? That's what Chazal say about this city. This is the city that this man was rewarded. So now, we have to understand something. This city apparently is the greatest city in Eretz Yisrael. People don't die there. Why was Yerushalayim named as the focal point of Eretz Yisrael? Why not Luz? Look what a great city it was. Why wasn't the Beis HaMikdash built there? So this question the Zohar asks. And the answer is very profound. The answer, the Zohar says as follows. I'm putting this, first I'll put it in the Zohar's words, and then I'll repeat it in a way that we can relate to. The Zohar says, sorry?
Can you rephrase the question that the Zohar is going to answer?
No. I'm going to say the Zohar's answer, and then I'll rephrase the answer. The Zohar says, the reason that Luz had these special characteristics is because they had the effect of one of the holy letters. It had the full effect of that holy letter, of the I forgot if it's a letter from the Aleph Beis or the letter from the Shem HaShem, I'm sorry. But it had the effect of one of those letters. But it had the full effect. It was under the influence of that letter, and therefore it was a place that was immune to death.
Now,
what's that?
Clear the holy city off limits to death.
It was declared. Yeah.
Clear the holy city
off limits to
off
death.
Off limits to death. And yeah. Therefore, you were not allowed to defile the city.
Right.
Therefore,
that's
you
right.
Had to leave.
So if a person really wanted to die, he had to leave. Yeah. They just didn't allow it in that municipality. You couldn't get a license. Yeah. Now, the Zohar says, but Yerushalayim has the effect of all the letters of Hashem, of all the letters together. And therefore Yerushalayim is more holy. Now what does that mean? What that means is as follows. The fact that people didn't die there represented one element of greatness, but it wasn't balanced. There was an imbalance there. If it was better for people not to die, people wouldn't die in Yerushalayim either. There was one element of greatness in that city, and that resulted in people not dying. But since Yerushalayim was the whole picture, and in the full picture, it's better to die, people died in Yerushalayim. Because, we'll end off with this little incident. We have time for this little incident? Yes, we do. We'll end off with this little incident. A Rebbe once asked his Talmidim, if you were the Rebbeinu Shalem, if I were the Rebbeinu Shalem, he said, if I were Hashem, what can you tell? Can you guess what I would have done differently? Scary question. Talmidim couldn't guess. So finally he said, you know what I would have done differently? Nothing! I would have done everything exactly as it is. That's what the Zohar is saying. The things that we see in this world are as negative, actually is simply the perfect balance. Yes, and most people didn't die, but it wasn't as perfect in Yerushalayim. Since Yerushalayim was even more perfect, since Yerushalayim had the full picture worked out perfectly, people did die there. And it's like we say, it's ultimately, it's better for us to be in that state. Alright? That's that for this week.